New heading, Moral Authority and Servant Leadership. The former Secretary of the United Nations, Dag Hammarskjöld, put it this way, "You have not done enough. You have never done enough, so long as it is still possible that you have something of value to contribute." Close quote. I also love the quote from Malcolm Muggeridge, which helps give us priority and context. This is what he said. "When I look back on my life nowadays, which I sometimes do, what strikes me most forcibly about it is that what seemed at the time significant and seductive seems now most futile and absurd. For instance, success in all of its various guises, being known and being praised, ostensible pleasures like acquiring money or seducing women, or traveling to and fro in the world and up and down in it like Satan, explaining and experiencing whatever Vanity Fair has to offer. In retrospect, all these exercises in self-gratification seem like pure fantasy, what Pascal called licking the earth." Close quote. Wisdom is the beneficial use of knowledge. Wisdom is information and knowledge impregnated with higher purposes and principles. Wisdom teaches us to respect all people, to celebrate their differences, to be guided by a single ethic, service above self. You see, moral authority is primary greatness, that is character strength. Formal authority is secondary greatness, that is position, wealth, talent, reputation, popularity. The interesting thing about moral authority is what a paradox it is. The dictionary discusses authority in terms of command, control, power, sway, rule, supremacy, domination, dominion, strength, might. But the antonym is civility, servitude, weakness, follower. Moral authority is the gaining of influence through following principles. Moral dominion is achieved through servanthood, service, and contribution. Personal and moral authority emerge from humility, where the greatest becomes the servant of all. Moral authority, or primary greatness, is achieved through sacrifice. It doesn't lack courage. It is not weakness. Robert K. Greenleaf, the modern founder of the servant leadership movement, put it this way. "A new moral principle is emerging which holds that the only authority deserving one's allegiance is that which is freely and knowingly granted by the led to the leader in response to and in proportion to the clearly evident servant stature of the leader. Those who choose to follow this principle will not casually accept the authority of existing institutions. Rather, they will freely respond only to individuals who are chosen as leaders because they are proven and trusted as servants. To the extent that this principle prevails in the future, the only truly viable institutions will be those that are predominantly servant-led." Close quote. It has generally been my experience that the very top people of truly great organizations are indeed servant leaders. They are the most humble, the most approachable, the most reverent, the most open, the most teachable, the most respectful, the most caring. As mentioned earlier in the chapter, Jim Collins, one of the authors of the highly influential book Built to Last, and author of the more recent Good to Great, conducted a 5-year research project around the question, what catapults an organization from merely good to truly great? His profound conclusion ought to change the way we think about leadership. Here is how he describes the top level of leadership, what he calls level 5 leadership. The most powerfully transformative executives possess a paradoxical mixture of personal humility and professional will. They are timid and ferocious, shy and fearless. They are rare and unstoppable, Good to great transformations don't happen without level 5 leaders at the helm. They just don't. He calls a level 1 leader a highly capable individual who makes productive contributions through talent, knowledge, skills, and good work habits. He calls a level 2 leader a contributing team member who contributes to the achievement of the group's objectives. He works effectively with others in a group setting. A level 3 leader he calls a competent manager, who organizes people and resources toward effective and efficient pursuit of predetermined objectives. He calls a level 4 leader an effective leader, who catalyzes commitment to and vigorous pursuit of a clear and compelling vision, who stimulates the group to high performance standards. But again, the level 5 leader he calls the level 5 executive, who builds an enduring greatness through a paradoxical combination of personal humility plus professional will. When people with the formal authority or position power, that is secondary greatness, refuse to use that authority and power except as a last resort, their moral authority increases because it is obvious that they have subordinated their ego and position power, and they're using reasoning, persuasion, kindness, empathy, and in short, trustworthiness instead. That is primary greatness. In the book, Leading Beyond the Walls, Jim Collins puts this principle in the context of the broader organizational environment. This is the way he states it. First, the executives must define the inside and the outside of the organization by reference to core values and purpose, not by traditional boundaries. Second, executives must build mechanisms of connection and commitment that are rooted in freedom of choice, rather than relying on systems of coercion and control. Third, executives must accept the fact that the exercise of true leadership is inversely proportional to the exercise of power. Fourth, executives must embrace the reality that traditional walls are dissolving and that this trend will accelerate. Close quote. There are times of great chaos, confusion, and survival when the strong hand of formal authority needs to be used to get things back on track, to a new level of order and stability, or to a new vision. However, in most cases, when people use their formal authority early on, their moral authority will be lessened. Again, remember that when you borrow strength from position, you build weakness in three places: in self, because you are not developing moral authority; in the other, because they become codependent with your use of formal authority; and in the quality of the relationship, because authentic openness and trust never develops. Abraham Lincoln said, "The surest way to reveal one's character is not through adversity, but by giving them power." Isn't it interesting that you will find that generally those with high moral authority are eventually given formal authority? Like Mandela, the father of the New South Africa. But not always. Like Gandhi, the father of the New India. You will also find, almost always, that those who have formal authority and use it in principle-centered ways will find their influence increasing exponentially, like George Washington, the father of the United States of America. Why does moral authority exponentially increase the effectiveness of formal authority and power? Think about it. Why does moral authority so significantly increase the effectiveness of formal authority and power? Well, dependent people are super sensitive to even the slightest nuance of either throwing one's weight around or the use of patience, kindness, gentleness, empathy, and gentle persuasion. Such character strength activates others' consciences and creates emotional identification with the leader and the cause or principles he or she stands for. Then when formal authority or positional power is also used, people follow for the right reasons, out of genuine commitment rather than out of fear. This is another form of the third alternative. This is the real key to parenting, perhaps our highest voice responsibility in mortality. Combining high standards and strong values and consistent discipline with unconditional love, deep empathy, and a lot of fun. This is why the greatest test of parenthood and the key to building a healthy, nurturing family culture is how we treat the ones who test us the very most. Then the others know we too love them unconditionally. Also, in difficult and troubling economic times, the natural tendency is to revert back to the industrial age command and control model, because people are fearful for their economic security. It feels safer. People also have the tendency to become more dependent and to respond to the command and control style. But it is in this very time that the knowledge worker model has its greatest effect and power. For it is in difficult times that we must produce more for less. The capacity to produce more for less is based on unleashing the human potential throughout an entire organization, rather than again falling into the traditional trap of having people at the top make all the important decisions and having the rest wield the screwdrivers. This approach simply does not work in modern tough times, where we must produce more for less. In short, in a bad economy, we may go back to the carrot-and-stick great jackass theory of human motivation because it works. But though it may enable survival, it will not optimize results. Now notice the contrast between leadership as a position, that is, formal authority, and leadership as a choice, that is, moral authority. Listen to the contrast. Position or formal authority says, might makes right. Choice, or moral authority, says, right makes might. Position says, loyalty above integrity. Choice says, integrity is loyalty. Position says, to get along, go along. Choice often says, stubbornly refuse. Position says, the wrong is in getting caught. Choice or moral authority says, the wrong is in doing wrong. Position says, the top people don't buy it. Choice says, use ethos, pathos, then logos. Position worries that the top people don't live it. Choice or moral authority says, be a model, not a critic. Be a light, not a judge. Position says, image is everything. Choice says, to be, rather than to seem, the motto of North Carolina. Position says, no one told me. Choice says, then ask, recommend. Position says, I did what you told me, it didn't work, now what? Choice or moral authority says, I intend to. Position or formal authority says, there's only so much. Choice or moral authority says, there is enough and to spare. Let's explore practical illustrations of how communities and individuals, some without formal authority, some with only moral authority, and some with both moral and formal authority, including a great military leader and other world leaders and heads of state, watch how they exercise their wise voices in serving human needs. These are practical illustrations of the eighth habit.